So this morning we were in various bits of territory. We looked a bit at metta and insight, just very briefly, and unhooking from the object, unhooking from the subject, letting go of even concepts of metta, and then we went on to look at some questions, including things about fear and also about how identity, how we develop as individuals. And I ended up with that example of the race where, yes, you want those who can go really fast in the direction of enlightenment to go that fast. But all sorts of things are brought up by the process to be healed, to be resolved. And yeah, we need to do that as well. The tendency is to go to one extreme or the other. You either kind of, just completely try to be the ones up the front, heading for enlightenment and ignoring the less developed parts and sort of push them out, which means that they often kind of go unconscious and then just sabotage you. Or you feel like, oh, there's no point me trying to really work up on the leading edge because there's all this stuff which needs attention. And you go back and spend a lot of your life just working through the less developed aspects. But it's not either or. Yeah. It's best if it's both and, really. Yeah. And we also moved into the territory of direct experience and the difference between reflection, where we're using all of ourselves, all of the past, all of the future, imagination, everything, and direct experience, where there's only this moment, and there's only what we can see now, what we can hear now. So for better or worse, all there is in terms of sound is this, largely the sound of my voice. And yeah, all there is in terms of people are the people that we can actually see. So even the people over there on my side of the room aren't there if I'm looking out towards Sankadashini and Sri Devi. Yeah. So we're just really coming down to that. And as part of that, we really use that filter of what is in the present. And that undercuts already a lot of selfing, because our sense of self is sustained by a sense of a me that has a past and a future. At its sort of extreme, there's a sense that I always was here, I'm here now, and I always will be here. So when we focus on the present moment, then we undercut a lot of what supports that sense of it undercuts a lot of that self-reference. Okay. Well, maybe just before we do some practice, just want to make sure it's clear. I mentioned the other day that from a Dharma point of view, the self that we're not really going to find is single, lasting, and has some degree of control, some degree of Aishvarya, which relates to Ishvara, which means like lordship. In Tibetan, the word for pride is the word for pride is nagyal, which means na is me and gyal is king or queen. So I'm the one who's in charge. I'm the one who's in control. I'm the one who has this realm over which I try to rule. But we can use words like I and me in quite an everyday sense, which doesn't produce suffering particularly, where it's just a shorthand for the five skandhas or the six elements. Yeah. So if I say I'm going home on Friday, I just mean that these five skandhas are going to get in the car and head for Cambridge. There's no particular suffering in that. Or if the Buddha says, tomorrow I shall go into Rajgir for alms, it's just a shorthand for saying this rupa, vedana, sanya, sanskara, and in his case, jnana rather than vijnana, will go to Rajgir. So that in itself isn't an issue particularly. But the thing is that then what started off as a helpful description kind of separates out from the actual experience and becomes a thing in itself, or appears to. So it's a bit like an example I often give is it's a bit like how some people talk about the order. A few years ago there was a friend of mine who I was going for a walk with on a convention at Wyndham who was talking about the order, and it was difficult. But after a bit I started thinking, hold on a minute. So there were order members kind of walking up from the shrine room. So I started saying, so is so-and-so like that? Oh no, they're not like that. Is so-and-so like that? No, they're not like that. And we began to realise after a bit that the order had kind of parted company from the order members, if you see what I mean. It had kind of taken on a sort of life of its own. Yeah. And you can feel that sometimes when people talk about something which is actually an abstraction. It's sort of lost its moorings in the direct experience, the actual experience. So similarly, that sense of me is partly, it's kind of become separate. You know, we've managed to create a separate concept which is no longer directly simply a description of the experience. So part of any insight practice is that we manage to separate out the concept from the actual experience, and going into our direct experience helps us to see through the concept. And more than that, the sense of me is not just a description of the five skandhas, it's Well, it feels like the one thing that you know exists. Yeah, it's like the classic example that's given is if somebody accuses you of something which you didn't do. So, I don't know, somebody comes up to you and says, you didn't do your job at lunchtime. And you think, no, I wasn't supposed to be doing a job at lunchtime. So you kind of go, no, it's not me. And at that point, the me that it's not feels very kind of real and definite. And if you're really accused of something strongly, yeah, at that point, you know, when you go, no, you know, it's not me, that wasn't me, it's like that me fills the whole of space almost. It feels like the only thing that you could be sure is really here in that moment. But then when you look into it, there's nothing that you can find that's solid or independent about it, but it feels as if it's kind of right there in the middle of experience, you know, having the experience. So that's what we're exploring. You know, there's no problem with the psychophysical organism in itself. There's no problem with, you know, the body as it is. There's no problem with the feelings, the thoughts. Yeah. The issue is that we're creating out of them something which is more than is there. And yes, often that has a real emotional charge. Is that clear? All right, let's do a bit of practice and we can explore that. So just sitting in meditation, as if the last bell of the meditation had just gone. Nothing particular to do. Free to be here or not be here. So we can just relax without turning that into a task. once more, feeling our connection with the ground. We're making the touching the earth mudra with our whole body. Doing our best to come to this fresh. Mind's always trying to save us time and trouble. Yeah, we felt the connection with the earth before, so no need to really feel it now. Here's a mental map, that's where the ground is down there. So we tear up the mental map. Just start from the beginning, feeling our way into the territory. Now bringing awareness up, particularly a sense of what we call the spine. Feeling our way into a posture, a position, which feels as if our energy can move freely, or as freely as possible. Becoming aware of the feelings and sensations in the body. See if you can let the awareness be intimate and detailed without being tight. Now let's be particularly aware of the breathing. Again, not the mental map. How do we know that we're breathing right now? And as these sensations of what we call the breathing are going on, does there need to be a someone who's breathing? Can the breathing just do itself? Would we let the someone who's breathing relax into the breath? And if there's a strong sense of someone who's meditating, we could look into that. Where is that someone? What's it made up of? How is it in our experience? and the last part of the meditation, letting go of any effort to stay with the breathing, to explore anything. Just resting. Life and the breath, all going on just fine. Without any need for anyone to do anything. Just sitting, nothing to do. Complete holiday.